Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk Livestock Show. The new year 2023 is well up and running at this stage. And once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Siobhan Walsh to talk all things farming as normal. To start, I have quick fire questions for Adam, Darren and Siobhan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, to start you off, ask Adam, I never get to let the weanlings out until April because the sheep clean the place in October and November. What am I losing out on and should I consider getting rid of the sheep? A non-controversial one to start off anyway, Adam.
Yeah, geez, that might be Darren, maybe one for Darren. Look at it, maybe it could be a bit of a drastic one, maybe to get rid of the poor sheep. I suppose there is a cost, but in fairness, there's two sides of it, right? On Tullamore, we see it that we're not able to probably get out early on some of the ground, and the sheep graze off that wet ground, we'll say, coming up to Christmas and into early January, and then they're housed. We wouldn't get utilising the grass on those fields if we didn't have sheep. The other aspect of it is, yeah, if you get out with weanlings early, you reduce your costs and you probably increase your live weight gain. So in the shed, you'll do 0.7 of a kilo a day, a live weight gain on 2 or 3 kilos a meal, whereas outside, you're doing probably a kilo and it's costing an awful lot less outside. So there is, but it's probably a short enough period, Jack. You're probably talking 4 or 5 weeks. So both has to be weighed up. And look at sheep, in fairness, they're working well with the system in Tullamore. So, yeah.
And if a place on wet ground, as you say as well, yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Tail end. Okay, excellent. Back to you in a minute. Darren, two quick fires in for you. Is it true the new shiny eye in the sky will be able to monitor the Space for Nature part of the eco scheme in the new CAP?
Yeah, I'd say, Jack, that might have already, say, been used to determine what's there already. So what the department have, say, let out in ag food, if somebody goes in and checks their ag food and sees the maps and sees, say, the department will have marked whether there's hedgerow, drain, scrub, all that side of things. So I have a feeling, without actually knowing totally, I'd say that's probably what has been used to say, put the preliminary estimates on that.
Second question there in turn for you. I scanned my yows last week and there's more of them short of flesh than I'd like. I am thinking about feeding a molasses in a molasses feeder. Would that work to keep condition on? So molasses in a molasses feeder, would that work to keep condition on?
Yeah, look at it, would, Jack. Molasses is quite a good feed, but having not looked at the cost of it or anything, what I'd be doing is weighing up the cost of, say, coming in with supplementary feed versus masses versus concentrates. It does work well in a system where labor is limiting, that you can fill up the molasses feeder, yours can come to it as they want, and it removes the need to be offering, say, concentrates or supplementary feed on a daily basis. So look, at it can have a role. It's something we might come back on next week. I'll have a look at the price of it, and I'd see relative to concentrates how it's coming out.
100%. Siobhan, one quick fire in for you. I see talk of a methane reducing feed additive in the journal this week, going to cost farmers 110 per cow per year. Ask Siobhan how many methane reducing feed additives are on the market, and has she faith in how they will work?
I think it's just that tree knock one at the minute, Jack, like, and that's kind of being registered slowly in different countries. But like, we can expect more to come on the market as time goes on. But there's huge variation in all of them and different ways in which you can use them. You know, you can add them to feed or you can have a bolus. And, you know, some people say that the efficacy reduces, you know, let's say the cows eat the feed additive in the morning in the parlour. Yeah. And it's really effective for the first hour, and then the correct effectiveness reduces for throughout the rest of the day. Yeah, so, yeah, look, there's a lot to be learned on all of those feed additives, and it's still a very early space, I think, to be in.
Okay, 100%. Yeah, that's as much as I know as well. Okay, back to you in a short while, Siobhan. Adam, weanlings, I'll start off there. You have a real nice piece of analysis this week. It's fair to say, Adam, if you don't have Charleys or limousines, you're probably not a sucker farmer.
Well, look, I'm not going to say that, Jack, but look, there's a place for all breeds, but I suppose, look, dominated there by limousine and Charlie genetics. You know, I think it's over almost 75% of all weanland sales are either Charlies or limousines. So look, they're the two biggest breeds. And when we look at, I suppose, the league tables, when we go through the different weights, it's probably Charlie and limousine and Belgian Blue are making up those top three prices in each of the different weight categories. Some of the highlights, I suppose, of the trade this year in terms of Belgian Blues seem to be coming up to the top there, and a lot of those weight categories, you know, 300 to 400 kilo Belgian Blue Bulls up €126 on 2021, 450 kilo plus Belgian Blue Bulls up €180, and you know, even heavy Belgian Blue heifers, a very, very good trade there. You know, you're talking a 500 kilo Belgian Blue heifer coming into 1750 there in terms of through the mart rings in 2022.
Is it fair? Like, because I mean, there's very few of them out there, so the few that are there, there's obviously a few lads scrapping over them, you know, but I mean, like, there's not many of them around. Like,
yeah, I suppose that's the caveat, I suppose, that in that. But look, we have to take what figures are in the system and what we're seeing out. Look, Belgian Blues are down at 3 or 4%. But we've seen that extra little bit of export activity in 2022, and that has probably helped the thing. You've also got this following around Belgian Blue heifers in terms of for breeding, and that's probably showing through as well in terms of that bit of appetite that's there. But yeah, Charlie and limousines are the big one, but they're not that far behind Belgian Blues. There's very little between. Like, if you take the 300 to 400 kilo, you know, in terms of weanland bulls, yeah, you're talking 342 for Belgian Blues, you're talking 330 for Charlies, and you're talking 303 for limousines. That's a price per kilo. But all in all, look, at a very positive year. Even if we go across all breeds, you know, the 200 to 300 kilo heifers are up 19 cent, 300 to 400 kilo heifers up 23 cent, the heavier heifers up 29 cent. Similar story in the bulls. Lighter bulls 13 cent up, 25 cent up for the 300 to 400 kilos, and 27 cent up for the heavier ones. That tells a story in itself, Jack, almost in terms of when people were buying cattle in 2022, there was a bit of caution there around those lighter animals and the very light, because they're long keep cattle. Mm. And, you know, people were afraid of that beef price coming down quickly. So, yeah, so they were going for that heavier one to try and get a shorter keep animal.
I mean, Adam, so it's fair to say the price was up kind of 20 to 30 cents a kilo for that Charlie bull or that limousine bull in that 300 to 400 kilo carcass. Like, that's a nice shift upwards, like.
It is. Like, if you take that 300 to 400 kilo, that's the most, we'll say, popular weight range that people sell their animals. And if we look at the three main breeds there, or you know, two of the main breeds, Belgian Blues came in at 11.97 in terms of 350 kilo. This is top end stuff. That's another important piece. That is, we split the animals into three different parts in terms of the analysis. We go top, average, and bottom. I went for the top for this analysis because, look, at anybody that's at the weanling game is trying to get into that top bracket, that top third. But if we take the top third of Belgian Blues, 11.97 for a 350 kilo Belgian Blue, 11.55 for a 350 kilo Charlie, and 1,060 for a 350 kilo limousine. Look, that's decent money, Jack. And in terms of heading up for that 1,100, if you could average that out for your calves, that's not bad at all.
Adam, does it change the game then in terms of the suckler piece? Like, I mean, you have a fairly hard hitting piece on government policy on sucklers, like in terms of where the future is, like, you know, but does that shift in price help that piece to justify keeping that suckler cow for the year?
Ah, it does. It's a small shift, I suppose, in relation to other enterprises. I suppose if you take, you know, take up 100 euros on Weanlands, you take across maybe 20 cows, you know, it's 2,000 euros. It's not going to make or break anybody, but it's definitely positive to see that's for a number of years now. We've seen that price tracking upwards, and it's really positive to see the biggest difference in the top third in terms of that top quality animal is shifting on. And that's as a result of a couple of things. But one of the main things there is, I think, feedlots and maybe bigger feeders are moving a little bit more back to those continental genetics, because they've seen maybe the kill out percentage, they've seen the weight gains of those continental animals. There was a big swing there for a couple of years maybe to traditional breeds, and that bonus, I would say, system was driving that. We're seeing in terms of honing in on costs and cost of feed a day and cost a kilo gain, that they're seeing maybe more in those continental cattle. That's driving on those top third of animals probably a little bit more. That's really good to see suckler farmers rewarded. But yeah, you're right, we wrote a beast this week on in terms of all the different angles of policy and where it's directed towards and what effect that will have on suckler cow numbers. And look, at suckler cow numbers are already going down, but it's obvious that somebody has seen this as a target to reduce cattle numbers, and every single piece of policy, we talked about this before Christmas, seems to be heading towards less sucklers, and we've wrote on that on page 26 this week.
I mean, the other piece that we've talked about previously as well, of course, is the whole cap reform piece and organics as an option for the suckler herd, like, you know, in terms of going forward and that payment per hectare. But our survey results this week, like, they don't put a positive light on organics anyway, that in terms of not many farmers considering organics, it looks like. Over 90% said they wouldn't even consider it.
Yeah, we've had huge interest, I suppose, in it, but that hasn't, we'll say, turned into applications or people going to go into organics. But there's definite interest there now. Whether that'll change in time and people will look at that, but we've a couple of big hurdles there to cross in terms of, look, we talked about the lion space on sheds and we'll say no rearing of calves either. There's a lot of maybe smaller dry stock farmers now are looking at that sort of rearing of calves and are rearing calves, but that's out then. If you're in organics, you can't go in with artificial microplacer into those calves. So there's a couple of hurdles there that are really, we'll say, keeping people out. And then the whole market as well. People are very worried about a market and having a premium in a market. Really, I don't think that premium is there. It's not going to be there. You're just talking about 300 a hectare as being the main hook to get you into it. But obviously, it's not going to be as positive as people thought. You know, we thought there was going to be a lot of people going to organics. But yeah, you're right. That survey is saying something different.
Adam, in terms of, you've been around a couple of farms lately, in terms of what's happening in sheds, is there any health issues or any issues kind of that you see in sheds around the country?
Yeah, we've had a couple of mild weeks, Jack, and probably lice. We talked about this on management notes this week, and probably lice is one of those things there that's affecting in the last sort of week or 10 days. Whatever has happened there in terms of mild weather, maybe it's turned to maybe lice infestation. You may be multiplying a wee bit in sheds, and just to be on top of that, because that can lead to reduced gain, you know, and you need to be on top of your game on everything with the cost of concentrates to make sure your animals are performing and there's nothing going back. And just a couple of tips there around, you know, making sure you're using the right product. There's biting and sucking lice. There's different products for different types of lice, and look, with the residual activity, they're probably maybe 5 weeks, maybe possibly 6 weeks. But if you've treated very early when into the shed, you're possibly going to need a second treatment now in January. Clipping the back is going to help, and just it's unbelievable the amount of people that'll go in and maybe treat a pen in a shed or two pens in a shed and maybe leave the third pen until another day. And with the best will in the world, you'll try to get back there Saturday, and you don't get there Saturday, and then it's the following Saturday, and then you'll have to go into the whole shed again. So if you're doing a shed, do it all. And just, there's a couple of tips there on managed notes this week.
Okay, nice one. We'll finish up, Adam, with the beef trade. How's it going this week?
Yeah, it's pretty positive, Jack. It's been a positive start. I suppose heifers up 5-10 cents in some factories there this week. You know, agents hungry for cattle. They've been out round mart rings. The couple of marts we've had this week, they've been round mart rings trying to buy cattle again. Big, big appetite there for cows and flesh cows. January is always a month where we see probably a lot of mince bought, a lot of manufacturing beef bought, because people, I suppose, are trading back a little bit in terms of the Christmas splurge happened and maybe tightening the belt a little bit in January. So a lot of mince is bought, and that's probably driving cows, you know, good quality cows up there at 480, even P plus 3 cows this week up at 430. So that's going to drive the thing on, and definitely, you know, Angus and Hereford cattle in demand, up to 30 cent there at the moment of a bonus on Angus cattle. So it's all pretty positive, and there's nothing to say that's not going to continue. I think we'll see that, you know, kick on for the next couple of weeks.
100%. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, the eye in the sky, big development this week. They'll soon be able to do the herding for us.
Yeah, Jack. It's funny. I was on a radio interview with Mike Neary last night in Midwest, and he had questions coming in, and like the questions were pointing to that was, Would they be able to read the tag number? Will they be able to see if we're spreading slurry out of season? All that type of stuff. And look, at the answer is the technology is there. Whether or not the department are going to be utilizing it in the future, that is yet to be known. For the moment, it's say the BIS scheme and ANC. But like, it just shows the technology that's available going forward, and anything is possible in regards monitoring slurry spread out of season, all of that type of thing.
And Darren, the big change kind of, we'll say this week, that you were writing about, is that like there's extra satellites there. There was satellites were always there. Like, we have the Eye in the Sky, we know, has been there for a long time, but there's extra satellites there now.
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's that they're utilizing more of the information coming on stream now. There would have been satellite inspections done in the past. We would have wrote before about, 'tis a satellite called Copernicus Sentinel 2, and we would have said that was collecting data there, working away. But in an Irish context, the data wasn't always, say, readable. And what I mean by that is that it was collecting data every 5 days, but if there was cloud cover there, that satellite couldn't operate. What they're going to be using going forward is the Sentinel-1 satellite, which sends a microwave signal to the ground. That bounces back up, takes a mirror image, and what you're working off then is this: if there's cloud cover, that's not impaired by it. Now, the two satellites are going to be working together, because while Sentinel-2, the images mightn't be as crisp or mightn't be, the resolution mightn't be as high. The benefit there, the department say, is that it's capable of collecting so many images in a short period of time that compensates for the lower quality. So I suppose the way to weigh it up is that you have two satellites working together that can take a really, really crisp photo. Like, yeah. I've seen some of the images that have come back from it. Like, and if you really, I suppose, maybe zoom in on it, like, we were looking at one in the office the other day, and you could see clearly the cows grazing in the field. You could see where fertilizer had been spread in a cover of grass. You could see the lines off it. You could pick out the tram lines in a field of barley next door. If we look, that technology does have a lot of, I suppose, scope. Now, what the department have said is that what they're really focused on for the year coming, excuse me, with regard, say, the basic income support for sustainability scheme, which replaces BPS, is highlighting three things, or identifying three things. They want to see, say, ineligible structures such as farmyards, houses, hard surfaces, concrete areas. They want those to be, mapped out or delineated out. There will be farms there, and there will be Lippis parcels where farmers have made a deduction to the overall area to compensate for those, but they haven't actually marked them in. So going forward, they all have to be marked in. So that's something that you have to keep in mind. The next thing is seen about the eligible crop. What eligible crop is there to say? And that's, look, Siobhan will have had experience with that, because there would have been, say, some checks done in the 14A scheme around what type of crops are in the past, and it's seen what crop is there or where maybe a subdivision is in, if the subdivision is in the right place. And the last one is checking farming, ineligible areas such as scrub. And like, that's, we've seen this, I suppose there is a lot of areas like that in recent years. And it's not to say that the department are going to come in, ring fence more scrub area or mark more scrub area and try and take payment off here. Because we've seen, and we've talked about it here before, is that under certain circumstances, scrub will actually be payable in the next cap. Yes. But it's to define how much scrub is there to be able to calculate, can you get paid for it or not? Okay. And like this, these are all EU rules. And the last one in is whether there's a farming activity taking place. And I think that's probably one that you'll see a bit more talk about in the coming year, because we're talking about whether it be having a minimum stocking rate, having a minimum farming activity with regards cutting, silage or hay for sale, sowing crops, or the department has said delivering an environmental dividend. So we wait to hear more around what that environmental dividend will be.
There's a couple of farmers this week, Darren, that would love to have the Eye in the Sky to see those dogs that were attacking the sheep. Like,
Oh, definitely, Jack. Look, that's your heart will go out to those farmers that's affected. Like, because even listening to it on the news, like, and it's great to just get national coverage. It's more coverage than what it needs. Like, but there's a few things that need to happen here. Like, we talk about legislation being brought in around dog control, around microchipping, around dog licenses. But like, no one has ever been convicted for having their dogs microchipped. It sort of falls between a number of stools. Like, the Department of Agriculture is involved, the Department of Housing and Heritage, which falls down into the Gardaí. You have local dog wardens. But when something like that falls between so many different stools, it's not actually being police-like. And look, some people will argue, sure, if the dogs haven't been caught in the field, no amount of microchipping will have worked. But in some of the cases in the past, there has been dogs caught and there has been nothing, say, they haven't been able to be traced up. So I think we need to get serious about enforcing the legislation around dog licensing and microchips, and in particular, around, say, following that up and seeing, I suppose, given the power that there's on the spot checks. But like, you're sort of asking in the area, what can farmers do? Like, and I think it's seeing any sort of dogs worrying or anything like that, that there's our dogs loose, like, that there is a greater appreciation around the harm that dogs can do.
Can do, yeah. I know, there's no doubt about it. Like, and Aaron, these must be, they're like, I mean, some of the imagery, like, they must be wolves. Like, I mean, they must be big dogs to be able to do what they've done to those two flocks in North Tipperary. Yeah.
And like, anytime you see a big sheep kill like that, like, it's not a dog, say, a stray dog generally going in and hunting for food. Like, this is dogs that are well fed because they have to be able to do so much damage, and it's sport. Like, and that's reality of, say, in some dog breeds, and even farmers, that's why they keep collies on leashes, or they keep collies around the yard and they have them well trained. Is this, in some dogs, there is an innate, I suppose, maybe desire there for rounding up sheep for sport, and to them, this is fun. Like, and like, there had to be, as you say, big dogs to do the damage that what was done. That's not to say the small dogs won't follow sheep either, but the untold damage that was done in the situation, in particular in Tipperary, like, there had to be a number of very big dogs involved.
Darren, in terms of CAP, again, just touching off the survey we have in the journal this week, like, I mean, the one big piece that stands out is like 50-50 in terms of who knows about what's going to happen in CAP, and having maybe no idea at all in terms of CAP and the impacts on it. Like, I mean, we've been talking about it now for a good while, like, you know, but I mean, there's still a large cohort out there that don't know what's going to happen in CAP, you know, that has started now effectively the 1st of January.
There isn't, like, there's a big job of work for everyone to do. Like, there's a big job of work for us to get the message, continue to get the message out. There's a big job of work for the department. There's an even bigger job of work for advisors, because you have so many new schemes starting. Like, we're talking about there a new concept this week, that area monitoring system. Like, that will bring up that advisors are going to have to check, our farmers are going to have to check maps along with the Space for Nature. Never mind understand the eco schemes, Chris, the new BIS, and then throwing on top of that the leasing of entitlement. So, like, for me, February, March, and April into May, like, you're going to have an awful lot of a steep learning curve right across the sector. And like, the department have said that they will be holding more clinics, holding more information sessions. I think all of that is needed, because you have an awful lot of maybe confusion, and then it's not simple to understand as well. Like we've seen, Jack, we've done a lot of in-cap meetings, like, and for the first few meetings, even where we'd be going ourselves, it takes a bit of time to digest information. There's so many different permutations and questions, and in particular, there's so many little cases that don't affect the norm, but that affect a small cohort of people, and even getting your teeth into that takes time. My advice for anyone listening to this, like, is that definitely when the maps come out this year, which more than likely will be early February, I would be starting to act in and not leaving it late. Because as we know, Jack, when calving, lambing ramps up in February, March, April, like, it's hard to get time to do stuff.
It is. It is, yeah, no, and it's going to take time this year more so than ever, definitely. Okay, we'll come back to that. And as you say, I think we've two cap meetings in the diary for, is it Ballina the 17th of January and Mullingar the 31st of January off the top of my head, Darren, I think, like, you know, so.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
We're out west and we're up in Mullingar later in the month, again, just on the cap information series. Darren, you did a little bit of scanning in Tullamore Farm.
Well, I can't take the credit for Sean scan there, so he did on Wednesday, and what would you say? It was tense beforehand, and has been tense beforehand for the last few years, because in 2021, after we had that high barren rate, we've been racking our brains and seeing what has gone wrong. And like, it even last year, we did 7% barren rate. Thankfully, things are more normal this year. That he'd 176 yaws put to the ram, 4.5% barren weight, so 8 yaws. Still maybe a percent high. You'd like that to be sort of around 3%, but litter size back where you'd want, 1.91 in lamb weight, so 2 lambs. And more, I suppose, maybe what you'd expect on the to read on the tin. And by what I say by that is the mules back to having a higher scanning rate, yeah. The first class Texas, a lower scanning rate those. Now we have to go through the exact figures to run the sheep through again the Sheep Ireland system, and we'll have exact data on that. But it's looking more like, Jack, where we were. 53 hoggets, most of which reared lambs as your lambs, litter size 1.79, barren weight of just 2%. So happy enough with that after getting a crop of lambs. And then there's 48 yaw lambs put to the ram for a 4-week period. Litter size 1.21, 10% barren rate there. But like you'd expect that with just, I think it was actually 3.5 weeks he ran the rams there with the yaw lambs. So okay. All in all, Jack, happy enough now with what way it went.
Not bad. We'll come back to that, obviously, again at a later stage. I'll finish with this, Darren. In terms of 2022, I suppose, in terms of how it finished up, in terms of the actual number of lambs that were slaughtered, like we'll say, in 2022 versus 2021, and I suppose prospects for price over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, like if we look at it, the kill finished high, 2.9 million. There was an extra 210,000 hoggets in the system, about 33,000 more yaws and rams, and lambs were back about 36 or 37,000. That would suggest to me that we're going to have a high kill of say, lambs or hoggets, whatever you want to call them, in the first few months of this year. Might not come on stream as quick. There's reports of farmers not feeding as much, given the cost of concentrates, and there's like you'd say that there is a bit of doom and gloom around the trade at the moment. There's talk this week of factories trying to pull prices maybe 10 cents. Some of that seems to be coming from a drop in British lamb prices. We've seen from the last sort of 2 months is there's been huge fluctuation in Britain in this. We can talk this week about prices dropping 20 pence. We can talk the following week about them going up 25 pence. So hopefully that is short-lived, because any time prices come significantly back in Britain, it does, I suppose, maybe make it a more difficult or volatile trading environment. Where prices are at this week is, or say for the second half of the week, is probably somewhere around 650 to 660 for farmers that don't have as much negotiating power, farmers going through groups or specialist finishers, probably somewhere between 660 and 675 a kilo. Like that's back 60, 70 cents in this time last year, and not taking into account higher finishing costs. So it's easy to see why, I suppose, the optimism isn't flowing at the moment in finishing lambs.
Oh, yeah, that's a fair shift now, 60, 70 cents a kilo. I didn't realize it was that big, like, yeah.
Yeah, like you're looking at 13 or 15 euros on a 22 kilo carcass. And if you're to look at maybe where concentrates are at, they're probably sort of anywhere from 420 to 450 versus sort of 320 to 350, 360 this time last year. So there's a significant shift there too in finishing costs.
Yeah, 100%. Darren, thanks for that. Chat to you next week. Siobhan, you won't be able to hide the straw in future. The eye in the sky will be able to see the bales, count the bales, and tell us. You won't be able to say there's bigger demand because you're scarce of straw.
Yeah, it's fairly hard to count the bales at the minute. There's a lot of them there not used, but anyway, it's raining away. You might all need them yet.
Exactly. It's early in the winter yet. You did a piece just staying with Tullamore Farm. I see Ellen was writing on Tullamore Farm in terms of the biodiversity scoring. Siobhan, again, standing back from it, you know, what biodiversity scoring is about, like, and why, you know, and what, maybe have you got results for Tullamore Farm, or how did it score?
Yeah, well, we want to tell people that next week in the paper. Look, it didn't come out too well, and we got a score for the quantity and the quality, and I suppose that's what's different about what we're doing. You know, that your Space for Nature from the Department of Agriculture gives you the quantity, and the quantity that we're getting is much lower than what the departments are giving out. And then it gives you a rating on quality. So you go A, B, C, D, E. So we're kind of around the C, and our aim should be now to try get to a B on quality. So basically, our hedges that are there, our margins or whatever, if we put a fence in front of some of those hedges, we'd automatically improve the quality, because Darren's sheep and everything, right, you know, are going along the hedge, and they're eating away some of it. And some of that's good, because we have some bare soil that's good for bees and pollinators and things like that, but we can't have it everywhere on the farm. We did the scoring along with the Bride Project, and people probably heard of the Bride Project. It's a group of farms down in Cork, and they're trying to work with nature. And basically the Bride Project have an app to do their Space for Nature and to work out the quality of the habitats on farms. That they also have a label, I suppose, and that label might go on to the produce from those farms in time. So that's kind of what we're looking at overall. Yeah, we want to improve the quality and quantity of the habitats on the footprint farms. But we also want farmers to get recognised for improving that habitat quality and quantity.
And I mean, so, you know, a lot of farmers will be listening to this and they'll be saying, what's she talking about in terms of quality? So really, in layman's language, I'll say quality is bigger and better ditches, I'll call it. You know, that there's more potential there for wildlife or insects or other animals to live in ditches effectively.
Yeah, and like, you know, a ditch has to be a full ditch. It can't be, you know, a tree here and another tree 10 meters down the way. You know, if you think, I always think of hedgerows as a corridor for wildlife to travel on, and it has to be a safe corridor for wildlife to travel in. So, you know, you imagine you're a little animal at the bottom of a hedge, and you want to get 500 meters up the way. You want cover all the way along. And you want food all the way along as well. And you don't want, you know, a bird to be, an owl or something, to be able to swoop in and see you. So you have to have a full hedge all the way up, and you have to have protection around you. So that means you have to have a thick hedge as well. But yeah, look, and hedges aren't the only habitat then as well. You know, we have margins on farm, and let's say we have a river on Tullamore Farm, and that grass margin is important for wildlife, but it's also important to keep the nutrients out of the river as well. So things like that are really important in this as well. So that's kind of where we're at with it.
Okay, nice one. So we can look forward to, as you say, seeing that score and seeing the results next week in the journal. The other piece I see there, Siobhan, this week is you've your 7 steps in terms of a sustainable 2023, I call it, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was looking forward to this. I said, shapers, she'll have all the silver bullets here. Now she'll have the fang dangle, this, that, and the other. Variable rate lime spreading. And do the books. Like, there's two of them I picked out. Like, you know, I was expecting inhibitors and feed additives and you name it. Like, I mean, it's back to basics on this one.
It's back to basics, and sustainability is always about basics. And that's what we're always beating that drum in the Farmer's Journal. You know, you don't need to go Googling the latest feed additive in order to improve your farm sustainability. And unfortunately, most farms in Ireland have a lot of work to do on the basics. And soil sampling, I mean, is a fairly basic thing for a lot of people to start to do. You know, we have, and I suppose not just a soil sample, but then to, you know, we have step 1 soil sample, step 2 apply lime. You know, the latest Chagas figures show a decline in optimum soil fertility. So PH, P and K is only optimum on 16% of soils in this country, down from 19%. So, and look, the fertilizer price situation hasn't helped there, but lime is a really cheap input. And, you know, I'll keep banging the drum until things start to improve. I mean, if you can spread lime on your farm for 25 euro a ton or whatever it is, maybe a little bit more, you know, why wouldn't you do it? If that's going to help bring up your P and K indices and make your soil work better, I don't know why you wouldn't do it. And variable rate then is just another step.
That's where I was just going to go in terms of variable rate, like in terms of is there that big an impact of the variable rate piece? Like is the pH changing so much within a field or a paddock?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably easier for us to see on tillage farms.
Yeah.
You know, you could see a field of wheat and there might be a big circle in the middle of that field of wheat, and that's because that patch of that field has a low soil pH and it's struggling. So variable rate, like, there's a lot of the contractors that spread lime have the capability to spread lime at a variable rate, and it can have a huge impact on your field, and it'll save you lime. It'll make sure that the lime is going to the right place. You might spread none in one part of the field and more in another. I suppose I'm a big fan of looking at your fields and saying, you know, what part of your field is underperforming. So aside from the variable rate lime testing, you know, maybe you just need to take, I'll split this field in two. That side of it there, that hill is underperforming. I'm going to soil sample that hill. And even if you do it in two fields and you say, right, I'm going to soil sample this field here, and then I'm going to soil sample that bad patch there where the grass never grows as well as the rest of it. And, you know, it's only another 20 euro or whatever onto the soil samples. Yeah. But it might be worth its weight in gold, like as you go on in the year. And even if it just opens your mind up to the fact that there's variation within fields and things need to be treated differently, it's a really good thing to do. Like,
hey, Siobhan, the mild weather, I touched off it there with Adam and Darren in terms of what's it doing to tillage crops? Is it a problem to see kind of the mild weather at this time of the year, we'll say, in terms of those winter crops that are sown?
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of cold weather. I think the conditions overall are, you know, are not great because ground is so wet. So I don't think the mild weather at the minute is having too much of an impact. If it continued on, yeah, it would. But there's a lot of winter crops in bad condition, Jack. Like, there's a lot of fields, you know, there could be a quarter of the field missing. So winter crops in general, it's some people didn't get them sowed. And there's probably a big chunk not sowed in parts of the country. There could be 30% of winter barley not sowed. But then within those fields, then there is large patches, and people will see that as they drive the roads. There's large patches of crops missing, and they've been missing since sowing time. And I suppose crows are an issue now as well. You know, crows have been an issue for the last number of weeks. And people are, that's a full-time job for people at the minute for those late sown crops that went in. Winter crops, I suppose, where winter crops are good, they're really good, and where they're bad, they're really bad. And yeah, I wouldn't like to see the mild weather continue, but it's not doing much great harm at the minute.
Is there much of a shift, Siobhan, in terms of the protein crops and growing more protein crops? Like, and I mean, can livestock sector, we call it, you know, push for more protein crops from tillage farmers and to try and kind of get that kind of local protein as opposed to that kind of imported soya, etc.? Is that, you know, how has that become any more of a reality, or has there been any real kind of shift in that? You know, we've seen policies, we've seen schemes by the government to try and incentivize tillage farmers to grow more protein crops. Is it still a difficult struggle to get tillage farmers to engage?
Yeah, it is. Like, the result, we have results of that survey there on the news pages this week, and it's mixed as to how many people are going to take up protein crops this year that haven't. And protein crops, in my mind, are a non-brainer. Like, it's just a no-brainer this year. I mean, you should be planting a protein crop on your farm because that protein crop doesn't need nitrogen. Your fertilizer bills are automatically reduced, and the payment this year is a minimum of 350 euro per hectare. And there's an aim of getting to 20,000 hectares. We're not going to get to 20,000 hectares this year, so your payment is going to be a lot more than 350 euro a hectare. So from a tillage point of view, you should be planting a protein crop. It's going to benefit your following crop and everything as well. Yeah, like, things are still slow on the animal side, Jack. And look, I mean, they haven't changed in a long time, and it's going to take a lot longer to change as well. Board BIA have made slight changes to their ESDAS, or you put the right name on it.
Yeah.
But you know that if there is soy in it, that the, you know, the soy is going to put up your carbon footprint. So people who see their carbon footprint on the milk check, if the soy came out in a ration, that carbon footprint might be slightly reduced. But like, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, we heard the lads talking about ration costs and everything, and you know, yeah. Irish grain in some cases, you know, rations are, it's cheaper to make a ration with maize in some at particular times of the year. Yeah. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, livestock farmers are looking at the cost of rations. And yeah, like we need, like there is, but there is some farmers there who are requesting Irish rations. And if you speak to merchants, you know, if you know, Dairy Gold is an example. They're a company who've really pushed Irish rations, and they say that they have livestock farmers there who request rations that are made from Irish ingredients, and that it's that's a very important part of their farm. They want to support Irish farmers of all sectors. So I don't know. I think in some ways mindsets are changing. But I don't know, from a tillage side of things, we're never going to feed the national herd anyway. And you know, we need to focus on premium crops. We need to look at malt and barley, mill and wheat, you know, protein for human consumption. And you know, I suppose it's tillage farmers' job to put the focus on Irish grains and maybe make Irish grain less available to the livestock sector.
Okay, exactly. That puts the pressure on in terms of supply and demand. Siobhan, 100%, leave it there for this week. Chat again soon. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Siobhan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.